The speech you are about to hear was delivered in Seneca Falls, New York, on Women's Equality Day 1991, before a march to the home of Elizabeth Cady Stanton. The speaker is Andrea Dworkin.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
I would like you to remember that when Elizabeth Cady Stanton proposed that women should have the vote, there was not one other woman at the conference who would stand up and second the motion. And Frederick Douglass seconded the motion that committed the women's movement to getting the vote for women. Now, it wasn't that the women at the convention didn't want to vote. It wasn't that they didn't understand how important the vote was. There was fear of a nonconformity that would be too great, that would bring punishment down on them. And so, even in a convention that they had called, even in their years of talking together and coming to consensus about what they wanted, in public, they would not stand up. And at the end of her life, Elizabeth Cady Stanton found herself alone again. When she spoke of divorce, when she spoke of women needing to own their own property, she was told that she would compromise the women's movement by these outrageous demands. But the women's movement was 100% committed to the vote. She couldn't tolerate the misogyny in the Bible. How do you think she'd feel about the $10 billion a year pornography industry we have in this country? You think she'd sit still for it? I don't think she would. I wish to hell she were here with us today to tell us something about what the pressures were pulling the women's movement back to what was already politically acceptable, not to bring up real issues of real pain in behalf of women. Keep quiet, you will compromise us. Keep quiet, they say bad things about us. And most women did keep quiet, but Elizabeth Cady Stanton did not keep quiet. Coming here today should be a testimony and a witness to the bravery of a woman who helped to create a movement and who kept fighting the power structure and who kept from being destroyed by the fear of many of her sisters and colleagues. She was a very great leader. I have a very old-fashioned view of power. I think that it's real, I think it's concrete, I think it's material, and I think that women don't have it. I think we have little pieces, little shards, little crumbs that we've picked up here and there. Mostly we have them on the condition that we do not use whatever little crumb we have for the sake of other women. So that when you find a woman in power, that does not mean that you find a woman who is fighting for the rights and the freedom of women. Power is organized in society. It's not just something that drifts in the air, and it's not really a matter of how you feel about it. You wake up in the mornings feeling very strong. The sun's out. That doesn't mean you have power. You wake up in the morning feeling very bad and down. You're a white man. It doesn't mean you don't have power. It's got nothing to do subjectively with your frame of mind. It has to do with money, who has it, who doesn't have it, with poverty, who's got poverty and who doesn't got poverty. It has to do with the integrity of your body. Is your body its borders, its sovereignty, recognized in the society you live in and honored? Well, we know the answer to that in this society. The answer is no. No for women. No, it's not. You can tell if you have power or not when you look at the way in which your life is valued or devalued. Women's lives are valued only when we're commodities on the sex market. Then we have some actual apparent use in this society, and a lot of money changes hands, although not much of it makes its way to us, because it's this group of people who know many ways to exploit powerless people. And they reap a lot of profit off of our pain. So we see women being turned into objects and valued only to the extent that we agree to be the valued object. You can know whether you have power or not when you look at whether your work is valued or not. Is it valued? Is it honored? Is it respected? Do you get paid what you should for it? In this society, for women, the answer is still no. No, we don't. Now, those who have power have credibility. They say that something happened, and their word has weight. They are socially believed because they are socially real and socially important. Every woman in here knows what it means to say that somebody raped you, or to try to get help because your husband is beating you. There is no credibility that women can count on. Where we exist in an environment that says, yes, here we are, this is what happened to me. And the society says, that matters. That matters, we care about it. We're going to do something about it. People say that mothers have power. They have power. But they don't have authority. They don't have authority out in the world. They don't have authority over their children. They don't get to make decisions that affect social policy because of their significant place in the social structure. And that means that they don't have power. That if you look at what they do, what you understand is that they don't have what they deserve, what they need, the respect, the credibility, and the authority. Power also means, in its most neutral form, the ability to say to someone, do this. And they do it. And you have even more power when you don't have to say, do this, and they do it. They're acting, it seems, on their own. But that's because they already know what it is they have to do to keep you from hurting them. Now that's the kind of power that is ordinary in women's lives. Most of us spend a fair amount of our time trying to keep from getting hurt, whether it's getting hurt walking down the street, or getting hurt in our own homes, or getting hurt with male friends. I don't think any of us can imagine what the world would be like if we did not live inside the plane of hell called perpetual fear. Power means that you can use violence against individuals of a devalued group and get away with it over and over and over and over again. And it looks normal. And people think it's fine. And in the case of women, we're even held responsible for it. We're told that we had a good time. That is a description of a kind of oppression that is unique. Oppression based on characteristics other than gender do not include this kicker that slavery was fun, that Auschwitz was fun. But you want to know that the 71 girls who were raped in Kenya by the boys in that high school, the boys said the girls had fun. When women are hurt, we are actually told that we're fulfilling our nature. That's why we provoke the attack in the first place. And that leads to probably one of the most important meanings of the word power. What you, the powerful person, says is taken to be what reality is. Gravity is on your side. Everything that you say looks normal because you're normal. That's why having token women in places of power doesn't change the situation for all women, because it doesn't change the norm. When colonial invaders go into a country and take it over, they establish themselves as the norm, and the indigenous people whom they've conquered as being basically socially deviant, inferior, incapable of doing what the conqueror can do. Women also live colonialized, classed as not ever being able to be the norm by virtue of our biology. And as a result, because we are inferior, because we are genuinely, supposedly, so stupid, these men think that we get pleasure out of the pain they cause us. We are told that what happens to us is in the natural order of events, that it's not social, it doesn't change when we make social change, because if somebody rapes us, that's just intercourse in a wrong circumstance. See? It's not that we wouldn't be having intercourse anyway, so what's the problem? And if we get pregnant and don't want to carry the pregnancy to term, we're wrong, because we're supposed to be barefoot and pregnant anyway, and we would be anyway. So what's our problem with being pregnant when we don't want to be? So we should change our attitudes and not the laws. Change our attitudes and not change society. Most of us have had enough of this. Whether you have power or not doesn't depend on how you feel, but whether you resist or not does depend on how you feel. It depends on how you feel, not each and every day, so that you evaluate, do I feel good enough today to resist or bad enough that I won't? It depends on really getting an attitude. I mean, we don't have an attitude that anybody has to actually deal with, because an attitude translates into behavior. It says, it means don't tread on me. We've done some good things, really good things. We've created some real legal reform that's vital. We've taken care of women after they've been raped, after they've been beaten. We've helped a lot of people. We've introduced ideas into the world that surely our feminist four sisters would have understood and probably did in the 19th century. But they were obliterated for the generation of feminists who are active now. Everything they created was culturally destroyed. And those who have power decide what is culturally real and what is important and what will live and what will not. If we want to redistribute power, which is what I think we want to do, that means we have to take it from someone and give it to somebody else. Part of the problem is that those who have power call their power rights. They say, I have rights. God gave them to me. The Constitution gives them to me. Everywhere I look, I find another validation for the fact that I am not exercising power over you. I'm just exercising my rights. Yeah, well, I know. I can see you're on the floor bleeding, but hell. You have to pay a price for freedom. So we get to pay the price. It's our blood that's on the floor. And men who exploit and use us and hurt us have the freedom. They have the power and they have the freedom. Part of what I want to suggest to you is that when you hear about rights, you break those rights down and see, do they serve the interests of power? Are they rights that that person should have or not? And I will give you the most poignant example that is current, which is to say that the $10 billion a year pornography industry in this country has constitutional protection. It is the right of pornographers to hang women from poles like that telephone pole, take pictures of it, and sell them for male entertainment. That's their right. The courts are protecting that right. The courts call it freedom of speech. But a doctor can't tell a woman about an abortion. Now, I hope you have noticed that there is a complete collapse in reality of the First Amendment defense of pornography. Do you understand? It's not for us. It wasn't written for us any more than it was written for the black slaves of the time. It is still not written for us. We know how important speech is because we have so little of it. Because so little of it is made real. And we know that when a man can't say something without using a woman's body to make his point, there's something a little wrong with the way that some people conceptualize what speech is. A little wrong? Maybe something we should do something about. Words are precious to us. Speech is precious to us. Many of us are silenced in childhood through sexual abuse, through incest, through other sexual abuse. But the fact of the matter is, words only go so far. I'm a writer. I love language. I love literature. But words do not topple a system of power. They never have, and they never will. I can stand here and denounce cancer. You think whatever causes cancer is afraid of me? But when I start trying to root out the carcinogens from the society I live in, then I start to get somewhere. Now, what I'm saying to us is we can talk and talk and talk and talk forever, but there are institutions that are identifiable that are keeping us down. And we have to fight them. And we have to be able to make the claim, and we have to believe it, that our lives are worth what we want. We have to target the institutions that are creating this hatred of us, this aggression against us, this devaluing of us, this constant insulting of us. And we have to destroy them. Please do remember that the women's movement was the first cousin of the abolition movement. And please do remember that a slave trafficking was stopped. And please do remember what it cost. It's not fair, but it's true, that those who are hurt the most and have the least are the ones who have to organize against the most powerful institutions that make the most money, that have the most greed, that are the cruelest, that are brutal. That is simply the truth. I say that you confront power first by facing it. And with women, that's not that hard, because usually it's right on top of you. Look up, like that. You find out who is standing on you, and that's not hard to do in rape and incest, in battery, in prostitution, or in pornography. And you see what you know about how power works, and you see where power is vulnerable, and you find ways of destroying the power of those who are hurting you. It is a truism that every oppressed person knows more about the oppressor than that oppressor knows about himself. That is true. Now the question is, how do we use what we know? How do we use what we know about male dominance to stop male dominance? I'm going to use the word power now metaphorically. It's what oppressed people can use because we don't have power. We have metaphorically the power of experience. Male dominance has no secrets from us. Men don't do things that we don't know about because they do them to us. We have the power of telling the truth, which would have meant standing up with Elizabeth Cady Stanton, because that resolution should have been seconded by every single person in that room. But it had to start somewhere, and it did. What I am saying to you is that the old Quaker adage of telling truth to power is probably the most important commitment anyone can make to social change. And there are many ways to tell the truth. And what I am saying to you is that we have to use all of them, not just the polite ones. We need the militant ones. We need the down and dirty ones. We need the strategies that other oppressed groups have used that we have until now been absolutely unwilling to even think about. We also have another kind of power. We have the power of imagination. Now, that kind of power may be in short supply because it's hard to reach through the pain to get at it. But we have it. And we have to use it because the routes that are laid out for us to follow are not the routes that are going to stop this war against us. We have to write another map, a different map. And we have to find our way ourselves through the terror and the terrorism of male dominance to come out the other end. And we can't do that unless we are willing to carry inside of us all the time the love of equality, the real passionate desire for fairness, a true human courage against cruelty, against exploitation. I want to finally say that I hope we will have allies, but it doesn't matter whether we do or not. We have to do this ourselves because we are the ones who are being hurt, and we have got to stop lying for what appears to be alliances with men who at every point sell us out. The most important resource we have is the resource of memory. And you know, we're amnesiacs. God knows we can't remember when we were 13 and we can't remember when we were 7 because the things that have happened to us are too hard to remember. But I am telling you that we will never be able to be free unless we remember everything about what life has been for us, so that we know where we are strong as well as where we are weak. We already know that. So that we know who our enemies are and who our allies might be. You can't plan a radical social resistance to a power that is totalitarian unless you are willing to use every single resource of mind and heart and body and soul. And thinking that Elizabeth Cady Stanton would agree with that, I hope we will now march to her home to pay her the honor of having cleared so much of the road for us, of having been so brave. And when I feel myself collapsing, when I feel myself caving in, when I can't do anymore, I will remember that this woman in the 19th century knew almost everything I know without having any of the actual resources that I have. And she was brave and she spoke out and she acted not alone but with others. How can we be cowards in the face of her courage? Thank you.
Andrea Dworkin, author and activist, who died April 9, 2005. The Wings Sound logo is from Libana's album, A Circle is Cast. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service. www.wings.org